The Family Lie by Jake Cross and read by Louise Williams for Saga Egmont. Prologue. 3:03 a.m. She wakes from a dream of drowning into a nightmare far more terrifying. The dream ends abruptly, in the usual way, eyes snapping open, heart thudding, skin leaking sweat. The nightmare introduces itself, slowly, though, and it starts with white noise. It oozes from a baby monitor. The little lady in slumber in the other room is 5, not a baby, but she's got sleep apnea and paranoid parents. Often they've woken to terrifying sounds of choking, but now the monitor is emitting a crackly, pattering sound. It's closer to her husband's side of the bed, and he's a light sleeper, so clearly he's already heard it, because on his side of the bed, there's nothing but a humanoid depression in the mattress, as if a heavy ghost sleeps there. But seconds pass, 60 or more, and the white noise continues, and her husband doesn't return. One elbow in the ghost's chest, she leans across to pick up the monitor, because this is obviously a fault with the machine, or a tuning issue, and that's when she becomes aware of another noise. Her eyes, still adjusting to the darkness, latch onto the window, where the glass is soaked. Her waking brain makes the connection. The white noise isn't interference at all, but rain. It's July, after all. The night's hot even when wet. At some point, her husband has got up, felt the heat, figured it would make their daughter's breathing worse, and gone into her bedroom to open the window. That's why the noise of the rain is reaching her through the monitor. But where is he? She rises and grabs her mobile to check the time and throws on a nightgown and takes her first step into the nightmare. Around the corner of the hallway, she hears the murmur of the TV beneath the throb of rain from beyond Josie's door. It's Nick's go-to device for whacking the energy out of Josie when the little lady cannot sleep. But the living room can wait a moment. In Josie's room, the monitor's receiver is on the floor, knocked there somehow, but thankfully out of range of the rain that lashes through the wide-open window. The sill, the undersheet at the foot of the bed, part of the floor, all sodden. Anna sticks her arm into the stinging downpour and drags the window shut, something Nick should have done when he heard the skies rend open. She slips as she turns to leave, both hands needed to break her fall. There is no pain, though, only rising confusion and a seed of dread, which propels her quickly from the room. A single step into the living room is all she manages before halting so abruptly it's as if she's walked into an invisible door. She sags against the doorframe, heart thudding so hard it makes her head tremble. The sounds she heard, not the TV at all. The room is dark, but she can see that the patio door is halfway open, rain shooting in to soak the carpet, fast and loud, and that's all she can see. Because there's no Nick, no Josie. But she drags her eyes away from it. She stumbles across the room and peeks behind the floor-to-ceiling room divider. But she already knew the dining room would be as black and lifeless as the rest of the house. No Nick. No Josie. Now she cannot avoid that patio door. She rushes outside, into the stinging rain, into the black. No Nick. No Josie. She calls their names, both of them. But of course there's no answer. The world is black, and the rain distorts everything like a sheet of frosted glass. But she can clearly see that there's no Nick, no Josie. Beyond the high back hedge, her eyes latch onto a fragment of street, and cars, and houses belonging to neighbours floating in tranquil dreams. She can see these things because the back gate is wide open. It's never left open, which means it's as good as a sign. Big and bright and neon and undeniable. Gone. A light is on in a house across the garden and the street beyond.